Hello and welcome to the Majlis, a Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I'm Mohammed Tahir, director of the Turkmen service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Last week, Turkmenistan has scrapped its oil and gas ministry, which it says to improve performance of Turkmenistan's energy sector. It remains to be seen what difference it's going to make, but the decision followed by a number of job cuts in the energy sector, the country's declining economy, as well as Turkmenistan's continued struggle to diversify its energy export. Today in the Majlis, the Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, we will discuss what is happening in Turkmenistan's energy sector, which is vital source of its income. To discuss the subject, I have John Roberts, resident senior fellow at the Dino Patricio Eurasia Center in Global Energy Center at the Atlantic Council. He is participating from Baku today. John, welcome to the show.
Hello, good to be on with you.
Very nice to have you. Dr. Lukan Çiftçi, Director of Central Asian Studies at University of Glasgow, is joining us. Dr. Luka, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon.
Very nice to have you, Dr. Luka. Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak Awazi, the Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, is also joining me here in the studio. Bruce, welcome to the
Majlis. Thank you.
Thank you, Bruce. Bruce, let's start with you. Could you please shed light on recent changes in the gas and oil ministry in Turkmenistan?
Well, actually, they dissolved two bodies, the Ministry of Oil and Gas, and then there was also the State Agency on Management and Use of Hydrocarbon Resources. You know, I mean, I'm still grasping with the logic behind trying to do this. I know that both the oil sector and the gas sector have had incredible problems and challenges this year, I'll talk a little bit about Turkmen Nebat later. I think that was probably actually the thing that prompted. They've had much worse problems, and I think that's probably what prompted the changes. However, for whatever reason, the government and President Berdi Muhammedov seem to feel that by taking this step, it will improve efficiency, although, you know, within both these structures. But the problems that the oil and gas sectors are facing are things that, for the most part, they don't have much control over. So I'm not really sure how this change is going to improve their situation.
John, how do you read this decision by Turkmen authorities?
I think it's certainly going to wind up being part of the centralization of power. There's a big problem, which is that essentially the only real source of income that Turkmenistan has is from gas. Therefore, whoever runs that ministry, whoever has authority, not just in the ministry, but much more in the State Agency for the Management of Hydrocarbons, is going to play a very major role. The problem is that the last manager of the agency was dismissed last autumn and was subsequently accused of corruption. Clearly, from the government's perspective, which means from the perspective of President Berdi Muhammedov, the institution itself doesn't function. The problem that we have in looking at this is whether indeed it's not simply that agency, but the entire system that is having problems in functioning properly.
John, the decision to scrap the ministry and announcing the Turkmen Gas as a legal successor of this ministry, how to explain that?
I think you will probably find that this is no more than moving the chairs around as the Titanic sinks. There isn't any real rational understanding. It probably relates far more to the question of previous incumbents and to the real problem is, how do you address failure? And we have had systemic failure over the last decade in that Turkmen's promise, which is enormous given their resources, has not been fulfilled because the Turkmen authorities have never been able to address key issues concerning the role of foreign companies and the need for expertise in developing major projects.
Right. Dr. Luka, how does the repositioning of the energy ministry is going to affect the way the industry functions, the way the various organizations involving the energy in Turkmenistan will function?
Well, it probably won't affect it in any significant way, mostly because ultimately that kind of revenue stream will always go to the very center of the regime. It is certainly true that whoever got to control that ministry had a direct control of the revenue stream as well, but I never heard of any alternative, if you want, positioning of that particular minister vis-a-vis Behdi Mohamedov and his closer entourage. So I really share the view that this is about how to address failure. So in that sense, it's just a measure to take more time, to buy more time, to see if things can be turned around. Because I don't think that the modus operandi of Turkmenistan will change after this. We'll have probably different people making same decision across very different ministries, but ultimately the outcome will always be the same. You cannot turn things around unless you change the way in which you engage with the foreign world, with the international companies, with other governments, with neighboring governments. Unless those things are changed, there is no way that we can turn the tide.
Right. We will be definitely going to talk about the challenges that the energy ministry or the energy sector is facing in Turkmenistan. Here, Bruce, we don't know much about the reasoning, the intention of the authorities, why they might be doing that so far. But one thing seems to be clear to me at this stage is that the financial structure of these two institutions, which will be carrying some of the authorities that the energy ministry had. The one thing was odd that the way that it was announced is that Turkmen Gas will be supervising the financial structure of these two organizations. How to explain this complicated situation? We were talking about this a little bit earlier. What's odd there, from your opinion?
Well, this kind of feeds into what I mentioned about Turkmen Nebit. Now, of course, I'm guessing about some of this stuff too. But when I said that both the oil and gas sectors had been having problems, you know, I mentioned that Turkmen Nebit seemed to be having especially hard problems. And in recent months, we found out during Berdi Muhammedov's visit to the Balkan province, right, that they had uncovered this massive corruption going on within Turkmen Nebit out there, where they'd lost possibly hundreds of millions of dollars, which had been siphoned off, and apparently no one had been able to track that until recently. And then that was followed up by the big fire, or the fire that was reported at the Turkmenbashi refinery, which was of course also Turkmen Nebit, something Turkmen Nebit oversees. And that fire, I might add, happened less than 2 weeks after they commissioned the new firefighting unit at the Turkmenbashi refinery. So it just looked like the whole structure of Turkmen Nebit seemed to be falling apart. There was layoffs going on across the country. And so I think that the decision to restructure the way they administered the gas and oil industry was kind of a knee-jerk reaction by Berdi Mukhamedov or someone else at the top to the spectacular failures that had just been uncovered or witnessed within Turkmen Nebit. Now, then we look at this, at the way that the restructuring thing works, and this is from the Turkmen government website. It says they're transferring all the funds from foreign currency account of the state agency, and it's all going to a special account of the state concern Turkmen Gas in the Central Bank of Turkmenistan. So you rightly point out that it seems like certainly all the money from the oil and gas sector is now the responsibility of Turkmen Gas. So that, you know, I would agree that Turkmen Gas, whoever's in charge of that, is of course obviously someone who's gained a lot of prestige within the government. But again, just because of the problems that Turkmen Nebit had, and it's really secondary to Turkmen Gas anyway, but the problems that they had in Turkmen Nebit were so bad that someone in the government seems to have lost faith totally in the way that organization has been running.
John, is there anything stands out from your point of view about this financial arrangement?
Well, the only thing is possibly that you can argue Turkmen Gas, in relative Turkmen terms, is an efficient organization. In strictly, I'm discussing this in Turkmen terms. It has got both competent officials and, more to the point, a load of competent technicians. So, for instance, when it's had to cope with emergencies, it has not been too bad. Now, the very fact that you've got a functioning organization that you can see actually produces gas, has got massive experience within the country and has been up and running for ages means if you think you do not trust an existing institution like the ministry or the state agency, then you hand it over its those functions to an organization in the sector that seems to work. So I think you can see why they've done it that way. The fact is, though, that you now are going to have, as it were, a business, i.e. Turkmen Gas, whose responsibility has previously been the actual production of hydrocarbons, now having to turn over, to take on, all the management and responsibility for what you do with the hydrocarbons, how you develop them, all the political challenges. That means it's going to, in practice, have to report straight to the president, because it becomes by far the most important institution in the country. So whoever runs it has to have the president's ear and be able to report to them, because the one thing you know is that the president is going to be looking at this superb, high, big, super ministry stroke company and saying, you have the future of Turkmenistan in your hands, which is going to make whoever runs that ministry stroke corporation extraordinarily nervous.
Right.
Okay. I'm going to throw in something. I wanted to ask Luca a question, because I know we've been talking about this, and I hope he can explain some of this stuff too. Now, we know, according to the state order that Berdi Mukhameda put out, that now the responsibility immediately goes to the cabinet of ministers, and goes to Deputy Prime Minister Yashgildi Kakayev, who's been in charge of the gas sector, or been certainly heavily closely involved with that. What do we know about Yashgildi Kakayev, and does this recent move show that he has become a much more central figure in the government?
Well, you're right. It seems to me that there have been a few rounds of purges across energy sector in the last year or so, which, of course, for Turkmen terms, it's pretty common. You know, instability when it comes to elite tenure, it's a characteristic of both this regime and the prior one. But at every round of purges, which, you know, some of them have been executed with surgical precision, Kakayev survived. Kakayev survived. He's still the man in charge of TAPI. He's still the man in charge of many other projects. So it seems to me that we can consider him now the most powerful figure in the gas industry. And consider that Turkmen Gas has been elevated to that kind of level, he would probably have an influence on the company as well. I want to return to what has been said before about Turkmen Gas. Yes, I agree, there is a lot of expertise in the company. But if we are to believe a few websites, the company has been in financial struggle. There has been a lot of work dismissals, a lot of workers have lost their job. They reduced some of the operation. The compressor stations across the country have been hit by serious rounds of dismissals. We also know that the regional subsidiaries of Turkmen Gas in at least two of the five velayat have actually been, they've seen their workforce reduced by a lot. So it could even be that having an increased budget might lead in the longer run to an expanding workforce. But the expertise that you know, John mentioned before is there, has been seriously curtailed by the financial trouble that they have. So if Turkmen Gas is now the supreme organ that really looks after the gas industry, which of course is the main employer, is the main GDP contributor, is the main revenue earner, is the main industry in the country, well, they will let be some funds put into Turkmen Gas, because the situation wasn't really positive in the last few months.
Mm. You know, if I could just throw in at the end there.
Can I come in?
Oh, yeah, go ahead, John.
Yeah, I would very much agree with that. I mean, I can say quite happily that I think in many ways there are some admirable qualities to Turkmen Gas. At the same time, yes, it is financially very, very constrained, and it is losing some of its expertise as a result of these pressures, which is going to mean it will be even more stretched in the immediate future. And remember, if it brings new people in, they will have to be trained, and who knows where it is going to get the people from to manage the financial side of a business. So this is all extraordinarily difficult. But
and also because
something was worth saying about Kakaev. Kakaev is a survivor. He's quiet. He's reserved. He's not at all like the former head of the state agency, who was urbane and very much self-assured. Kakaev keeps himself to himself, but he is actually far more open. He almost as if he projects the image of being the sort of quintessential former Soviet apparatchik. He's not. He thinks very carefully before he says anything, and he is actually occasionally open to new ideas. It might be quite interesting now that he is no longer, as it were, one of the top two people, but is the undisputed person. He has got the most impossible job you could have in energy on his plate right now, which is namely trying to find how Turkmenistan can break out of its energy isolation at a time when it has no cash and when international interest in Turkmenistan is probably at an all-time low.
Wow. John, thank you very much. Dr. Luca, you have something to say, otherwise we will go into a break.
Yes, I just wanted to add a very quick thing on the training that has been mentioned before. Yeah. I very much agree with that point as well. In the last round of reshuffling of the energy sector of Turkmenistan, a few institute training students on energy issue have been closed. So not only we see Turkmengas having sort of less financial potential, but we also see that the training capabilities in the country have been decreasing drastically, which is a problem for the years to come.
Right. Dr. Luca, thank you very much. Let's take a short break here. When we come back, we will discuss Turkmenistan's energy sector and its overall challenge. Now, in the first half of the Majlis, we have been discussing about recent changes in the energy sector and what does it mean. In this part of the discussion, let's talk about the challenges that the energy sector is faced with, source of those challenges, and ways to overcome those difficulties. Discussing the subject with me today are John Roberts, Senior Fellow at the Dino Patricio Eurasia Center and the Global Energy Center at the Atlantic Council, Dr. Luca Anceschi, Director of the Central Asian Studies at Glasgow University, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Kishlak Awazi, the Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I am Mohammed Tahir, Director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. John, now, scraping the gas and oil ministry is the recent step among many other decisions taken involving the energy sector in Turkmenistan. In recent months, we have seen increasing number of unconfirmed reports of mass job cuts in the ministry, which is supposed to be the last industry to be affected by any economic decline. What are some of the other major challenges that the Turkmen energy sector is currently facing, John?
The main ones are all concerning external exports. If you want to look about it very simply, Turkmenistan has the world's fourth biggest gas reserves. It contains the world's biggest onshore gas field.
No.
How do you monetize that resource? Answer, you have to get it into exports in one form or another. You can do it directly by pipeline, but much of that is already taken care of by agreements with China. Getting it to new markets that will pay hard cash terms at market rate is extraordinarily difficult, because either you have to cross Afghanistan, which is a massive security problem that probably cannot be resolved, or you have to get it across the Caspian and into and across Azerbaijan, and that poses enormous questions concerning whether Russia would allow that to happen, and indeed what would be the terms of such exports. But more to the point, you can't even do very much indirectly. the Turkmens thought they could get a whole lot of petrochemical industries going and export petrochemical goods and fertilizers to countries. But there are gluts in many of these products on the market already. So do you burn the gas and sell it as electricity and export it south to Iran? That's one possibility, but you're not going to get much cash from the Iranians. They go for barter.
Yeah.
So wherever they turn, Turkmens find making hard cash, real money, real income from their natural resource is extraordinarily difficult these days.
Right. Yeah. Dr. Luca, well, in terms of timing of the decision that we have been talking in the first half of the program, describing the energy ministry and the other ally offs in the industry, how do you explain the timing?
Well, the timing, I think, is dictated by the fact that the industry as a whole is at a very much thermal crisis. I mean, we always knew that when it comes to the country's been going through a 2 years now economic crisis since the devaluation, and we always told Mohammed that the last two industries that were going to be hit by the crisis would be the military first and then the energy. I think that this kind of response, restructuring, profound restructuring, because not only you change the structure, you also change the chain of command or the gas industry, is a response, a tentative response to try to address the crisis. Because if we look at the revenues that they are getting, the revenues are actually decreasing quite drastically, whereas the amount of gas that they are selling is pretty much stable. So the crisis they're experiencing, what I've called the export crisis in my writing, is different this time, because in 98, in 2008, 2009, they had sudden interruption of their pipelines, which led to decreasing revenues, whereas this time they keep selling. Turkmenistan is still selling their gas to China, Iran, and less and less to Russia, but the revenues are decreasing quite significantly. So I think that it's trying to get a creative response to the crisis, and when you realize that the current pipeline network might no longer be sort of instrumental to export as much as you can, when the adventure in petrochemicals doesn't really lead you anywhere, and also the fact that Iran is willing to only to go the barter, you know, like, and we saw that the same deal they accepted last week was the deal they refused last year, so they actually had to go for those billions of dollars. So it seemed to me that they're trying to shake up things, because this is the time where the crisis has now become fairly severe.
Right. John, Dr. Luca's opinion is that these restructuring in the ministry or the sector has to do with the ongoing economic situation in the country. And until recently, you have been visiting Turkmenistan. You were engaging with the officials there. Were they aware that something is coming up? Were they aware of the changing situation there?
It's impossible to tell. They did know that they were in an economic crisis of some kind. But you can't, when you have a country with a high degree of personal rule, you cannot tell what is going to happen in advance. There isn't an organized institutional structure and set of procedures that will indicate that there is going to be such a drastic change in how energy is to be managed. So you don't pick, all you can pick up, the most you can pick up if you're an outsider there, is possibly a sense of unease that things aren't right and that people don't know how to handle them. So I think that from my last visit, and I have to confess I have not been there this year, it is extraordinarily difficult to ever to quite gauge what is going on. Worry you can pick up, yes. What kind of worry, how deep, and whether the worry is personal or whether it's institutional, whether it's worry for the country, those very, very difficult to tell.
Bruce, in terms of Turkmenistan, we have seen that it is quite difficult for them to quickly respond to ongoing situation by a policy change into adopting into the needs of whatever taking place. So how do you see going forward how the Turkmenistan is going to proceed in this situation.
You correctly pointed out that the nature of the regime in Turkmenistan is one that doesn't allow for an official to come forward and say the policy we've been pursuing is a total failure and we're going to have to scrap that and start from the beginning. They don't admit to mistakes. So they're going to have to figure out a way at least to spin this, to explain this, any changes they make as being part of a longer-term plan that they always had to begin with, which is very unfortunate because that's a time-consuming process, is to try to force some kind of change into the system that they've already established there. And that's going to be a major obstacle for them going forward. You know, especially given this conversation so far, there was a time where I thought that perhaps if they had opened up some onshore sites and brought in foreign investment, foreign companies, that it might be a salvation for the country. But, you know, this all comes back to the export route question of fine, you can bring people in with all the expertise in the world, but that still won't get your gas out of the country. That'll make it more efficient to produce, but there's still nowhere to send it at the end of the day. So they are really backed into a corner, and I don't see there's any way out. You know, there's been some discussions with very, very brief discussions with Russia, which I believe is trying to lead back to a resumption of exports to Russia. But those were, you know, as we've heard, those were very small amounts in recent years, so that certainly won't be a salvation for the country. I know they started their oil tanker oil exports again to Makhachkala in Russia, but that's only going to come to 2.5 million tons in the course of a year, which is nothing. There was a time a couple years ago where there was, you know, we heard that there's low interest, and there is low interest in Turkmenistan now. A couple years ago there was much more interest, and if they had opened up the things a little bit more and decided they were going to bring some companies in to get their gas fields up and producing as fast as possible, it might have looked more attractive. It certainly to a market like the European Union, who would have maybe put a little more emphasis into pushing forward projects that would link them to Turkmenistan. But I don't think the interest is there. The finances aren't there. The financial interest is not there because the price of gas has come down so low that I just don't see anyone. Certainly, you know, as John mentioned, and as Luca knows too, you're going to risk the ire of Russia by trying to build a Trans-Caspian pipeline. And is it worth it at the price of gas now, especially with Azerbaijan shipping and TANAP coming up soon? Probably not.
Can I come in on that point?
Sure, John.
Yeah, it's just the Turkmens for two decades under Niyazov and in the first sort of 7 or 8 years of Berdimuhamedov's presidency, they kept wanting to think big. 30 BCM to India or Pakistan, India, 30 BCM or more, maybe 40 or 50 to Europe. And they were encouraged in this in the sense because that is exactly the kind of volumes they're managing to deliver to China. They've never understood that if things go bad, you need to think small. For the last 2 years, the Azerbaijanis have been pressing them and saying, look, we have a gas balance problem in Azerbaijan. We could happily take a certain amount of gas from you, 5 BCM, maybe even as much as 10 BCM with some going through to export eventually. But we could at least take 5 BCM from you and use it in the Azerbaijani and Caucasus system and help it to build up petrochemical industry over this side of the Caspian. The Turkmens do not appear to have responded to these openings at all, as far as we can see. We know that the head of SOCAR, the Azerbaijani state oil company, went to Ashgabat at least 4 times, maybe more, and could not bring back an agreement. And I think that one of the reasons they could not bring back an agreement, and they got lots of terms with some of the technical officials as to how it might be done in Turkmenistan, but they couldn't get final clearance at the top for an agreement. And that probably is because it was very difficult for the Turkmens to say, well, we can agree 5 BCM and maybe we'll get something much bigger later, because that's not how they think. They actually have tended in the past to think, well, we've got so much gas, surely people will want to buy big volumes, and don't quite understand that the world doesn't necessarily operate like that.
Interesting point, John. Dr. Luca, we have already seen some constraints in the Turkmenistan due to the crisis you mentioned, the lie-off in the energy sector and scrapping the energy ministry, and you also mentioned the economic crisis there. So what do you think? What is coming next? What is going to happen next?
Well, I'm very happy to hear that Kakayev is open about new ideas, because this is exactly what they need. They will need to rethink their export policy. It's what they've done so far, either with what John was saying, just going for the big shots, or to keep sort of obstructing the entry of foreign actors into onshore development. It is no longer sustainable. Again, the statistics are pretty clear. The export crisis is major, and the revenues are decreasing. And the revenue is not just about economic capital, it's also political capital. The president will be able to do less and less with the revenues that he gets, which creates issues of co-optation or clientelism, and of course, overly fragmentation in the longer run. There is no serious attempt at diversification. We haven't heard anything. Petrochemicals didn't work. So it seemed to me that they put themselves in a corner. They got the back of the wall now, and they need to get out of where they are. And the thing is that in the last 3 or 4 years, everyone has been calling the situation to happen. Like, we knew that the writing was on the wall. And now this sort of further restructure of the energy industry, the gas industry in particular, has to be seen, for me, as an, probably the last attempt to turn things around. Also because, you know, like every week, I mean, you and your team, Mohammed, publish new examples on how the crisis is bad in different sections, foreign reserve, foreign currency, and so on and so forth. There will be a time in which these things will become bigger and bigger, unless, I mean, given this is essentially a mono-resource economy, a lasting change in the gas industry. So I'm afraid I can't be optimistic, but if I interpreted this change in a positive way, if I give a positive spin to what we're discussing today, it seemed to me that Kakayev will let to come up with new answers. Answers, by the way, will let to be shared by the president as well, because the president has got a very firm grip on power. We've seen that he's very interested in creating some sort of dynasty, so it's not a man who's actually ready to give up. So it's the end. The energy power in the gas cloud is actually very important for him. So we'll see. It's, again, watch this space. But the room for optimism is shrinking on a daily basis, I'm afraid.
Thank you, Dr. Luca. It's a good point to end the discussion here. John, the final point, and I know you have been doing lots of consulting on the energy sector over the past several years. Imagine Berdi Muhammedov is listening to you. What would you say to him to do next to be able to deal with the situation that he's faced today?
It's probably far too late, but should a major international company come to his attention with a suggestion for a combination of construction of a major external pipeline in exchange for a direct stake in the upstream sector, he should look very carefully and change, if necessary, whatever regulations would prohibit such an arrangement. One would hope that he would be able to see that although such an arrangement would certainly be in the company's interest, it would also be in Turkmenistan's interest.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, John Roberts, Senior Fellow at the Dino Patricio Eurasia Center and Global Energy Center at the Atlantic Council, for your insightful thoughts. Dr. Luca Ancici, Director of Central Asian Studies at the University of Glasgow. Bruce Panier, Editor of Kishlak Awazi, the Central Asia blog at the Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Thank you, gentlemen, for being part of the Majlis today.
Thank you.
Also, before to end the Majlis today, I just wanted to make a short announcement that this is probably my last show from Prague in the capacity of the Turkmen Service Director. As of August, I will be running the Majlis from Washington, D.C. in a different capacity as the Media Relations Manager on Asian Affairs for Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Thank you. Thank you, panelists, for being available for the Majlis for more than last 2 years. I know, John, you have been in the Majlis more than once. And Dr. Luca, you have been one of our regular guests.
Practically a co-host.
And co-host. And Bruce Bonnier is a co-host, always very helpful here in the studio. Thank you very much for being part of the success of the Majlis.
Mohammed, thank you very much for hosting it. And please, will all three of you accept my apologies for mucking you around by not being able to do it earlier in the week?
No problem. It's well worth waiting for.
No problem. So I look forward to keeping the momentum from D.C. as of August. So this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, the Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Bye-bye.